Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between the Black Awareness Association of Juno and KTOO. I am your host, Christina Michelle, and today I am joined here by Brian Compton, Brandon, aka Peanut Williams, and Chantel Webb Candler. And we're discussing historically Black colleges and universities, also known as HBCUs. So, Brian, before we went to break, you shared a little bit about your experience and how you got to Grambling, and you mentioned that you attended Northeast as well. But can you tell us about your experience between those two schools?
Okay, yeah. So I initially attended Northeast Louisiana University, which is located in Monroe, Louisiana. So I was in Northern Louisiana, which is up top. And Northeast Louisiana, at the time I attended, I'm assuming it probably still is too, as they didn't change the name to ULM, but it was a predominantly white college. There were a handful of Blacks there, and nothing to knock the school for that. The education there was good, but attending Northeast, there was something that was missing for me as an Afro-American man, especially coming from California, the big city, quote unquote, to a smaller town, and then a Southern environment and all the elements that coincide with that, coming from the West to the South. And there's definitely a different vibe if you ever visit some of the Southern states in regards to the West Coast. So adapting to that, it was different. So even the in comparison to attending Grambling and attending Northeast, the curriculum, the attention from the teachers, the size of the classes, the university itself, the sizing, the opportunity that was offered at Northeast versus Grambling State, it was prevalent. Like, it was night and day in the sense that by Northeast being a larger university and getting better funding and things of that nature, especially back then, we talk in the late 80s, early 90s, but you can imagine back then for Grambling State, it was a bigger challenge. So we speed forward. Now I leave the predominantly white college and I attend Grambling State University, which is a predominantly Black college. And I could immediately feel the difference. One, I was surrounded by people that looked like me everywhere, all on the campus, which made a difference. For me, it was a little more welcoming. Now, you know, is this the true view of how life is for a Black person in perspective of how we live in the population? No, but it was good to be at an institution that was specifically focused on educating Afro-Americans. And you can tell even with the class sizes, the teachers, a lot of the teachers at the university were actually either Black attendees or graduates from other HBCU schools. So they knew the struggle and the challenge that you may have had just to even get on a college campus as an Afro-American. I mean, let's not even, you know, that's a whole nother show alone, because at that time, it was graduate, you try to get a job. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of options for Afro-Americans then. So to be at a Black college, it was an honor and a privilege, because even when it came to the teaching, when I got to Grambling, my teachers knew me by name, and they made sure if I was failing, it wasn't no, you just get an F and nobody cared. No, they was pulling you to the side. They was in your face. They were very adamant about making sure that us as Afro-American students succeeded in our journey to graduate. Am I saying that that wasn't offered at Northeast? What I'm saying is the education was different just because of the college campus and the focus. Because now I'm at a historically Black college, which their whole goal is to make sure Afro-Americans have the same opportunity, if not better, to be successful in this world once they leave this campus. And so you could immediately see that focus from attending a larger college into a smaller institution. But as focused, their focus was making sure that Brian Compton got the best experience in education while he attended that campus. That same experience, that's pretty much universal. And that's what makes the Black experience in attending the HBCU so special, I'm sure, in some facets.
And B, just to piggyback on your on your experience, my advisor called my mom to let my mom know that I was messing up in classes. So I got that phone call at 8 o'clock a.m., which is 6 o'clock L.A. time. And my mom was like, stop messing up in school. You know, this is, you paid for school. This is not free. I was like, you're right.
Yep.
But, you know, that's how it was.
And see, my advisor was, or shall I say, my mother basically solicited her number to my advisor and solicited him reaching out to her in case anything went wrong. Honestly admit, because everybody has their stories, I was one. I still to this day can't pinpoint what went on in my head that I decided to stop going to class. But everything that Brian said, yes, they will. Whether you're sick or not, they will show up to that door. And especially if you're staying at a dorm, they will pull you aside if you live off campus. And at CAU, depending on the teacher in the day, class at 8 o'clock, 7:59, that door is locked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, discipline. Yeah. Discipline so, and accountability.
Yep. But I was fortunate that there were a couple of my professors that said, no, you learned this lesson because you messed up. And there was one that said, I'm going to let you take this exam. And it was an exam that I aced, even though I hadn't been in class. But because of my attendance, she said, you know, I can't give you an A. And so she gave me a B. And I took that as my lesson. I got reamed when I came home. And my parents were like, we paid for the semester out of pocket. And this is what you're going to do? Or you're going to take loans now. And upon graduation, we will figure out how much of those loans we will pay back. But this one semester, oh, you're paying that back, Jack. And that's what I had to do.
Ooh-wee.
Yes.
The struggle
yes
to stay in school.
Yeah. Yes, they know you by your name. They don't know you by a student ID number. You know, I don't know how many PWI students can easily have access to their university's president, but at HBCU, that is a real thing.
Yep.
Wow.
Right? Amen. President at Clark Atlanta will be more than happy to give out his cell phone number to anybody that asks and say, text me.
Yes.
Yeah, I co-sign that.
Do you have to be Black to attend an HBCU?
No.
Okay.
I'll piggyback off of that. No, even to going back to 1865 when Atlanta University was established and founded, we had white students and students of all backgrounds from the jump. Unlike other schools and institutions, we don't need to brag about our diversity. We don't need to meet certain quotas and caps of our diversity. HBCU has always been diverse. And a lot of the white students and other students that attended HBCUs were right there with us marching in incidents and getting arrested for our rights.
Yeah.
So contrary to popular belief, we've had diversity of non-Black students since the 1900s. Imagine a white student in 1870 going off to college with Black kids. Your people don't want you. Family. So no, not at all.
Okay. Thinking off of Chantel, there's historical records. We had Tuskegee, we had Japanese students in 1901 taking pictures with our students on campus. Japanese students in 1901 at Tuskegee, Alabama. So you don't have to be African-American or Black to attend HBCU.
What do you think a student who is not Black would have to gain from attending an HBCU? You've already mentioned so much in terms of the discipline and the accountability and the more personalized educational experience. But would you add anything else to that for someone, say like one of our listeners is thinking about suggesting an HBCU to their child, or they themselves are looking at or considering attending? What do you think that they would have to gain?
I mean, for one, the attention that the prospect is going to get by attending a HBCU outweighs probably everything right there. Like you said, you can't get around the accountability piece, because that's one thing that these are known for on a big scale, is they care about your child graduating, if anything. You know, there's no color line. We welcome all races, creed, and colors to HBCU. So it's definitely going to be a game changer for any attendee. especially if they had the experience like me to maybe attend a predominantly white college and then transfer. But for those who are interested, it's like anything else, I would say, you know, do your homework, find, look them up online. You know, there's so many avenues with information now for you to check out. You know, all the colleges normally got Facebook pages, Instagram pages. You know, you can Google the school that you may be interested in. And I'm pretty sure it won't be hard to find any attendees if you really look at any of the alumni chapters or things of that nature. So, you know, that would be my advice to them. That's what they may experience different than attending a more known college in a sense.
Thank you, Brian.
And also just to piggyback too, there are like two or three HBCUs who are not, which are non 99% African-American. They're majority Caucasian. So, but really? Well, they have a few Black students on that campus. So
okay,
it's almost the same thing. Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me about STEP shows. Whenever you see Black colleges and universities featured in TV shows, one of the things that they always highlight are the STEP shows. What's the significance of those, and have you ever participated in one?
We're going to take that one. y'all want me to get jump on? Go ahead, P. I know you didn't got your step on.
I personally, I've never stepped. I'm not a stepper. I am a stroller. But attending step shows is like it's like going to a family reunion. Mm-hmm. You know, we have many organizations who practice. Some practice all year long, or whatever case may be, just for one step show, and that is for bragging rights. So, for example, I know Tuskegee. If you win the homecoming step show, you have bragging rights for the whole year. for the whole year. And then you might get recognized nationally. You might get recognized regionally. So it really all depends on, you know, your organization and college and region. But it's a huge part. Everybody's having fun. You get dance breaks. I mean, and, you know, you get some food and libations, right? So, I mean, you can just have a good time.
So is the stepping a part of, yeah, of being in a fraternity? Or is that separate?
I mean, no. The stepping, I can't tell you the year. I'm not going to be a historian and say when the first step show took place. But what I can say is that was another facet of the HBCU and fraternity experience that attracted me as well. I knew that I was going to Grambling, and I knew that I was going at that time pledge a fraternity. And so being exposed to seeing the step teams and things over time growing up, they're connected, you know, and like Pina said, depending on where you are, like I knew the year that we crossed in our fraternity with that spring 91, we had assembled a step team and we were traveling all around. But anyway, that year we had a good step team. We were taking a lot of first and second places all around that particular region. Like Pina said, it's fun. It's discipline though, because you got to practice hours. I mean, we would practice like months for step shows. It's a display. Mm-hmm. If not just representing your organization, you representing the school you coming from and that you stepping for, because that's how they label it. You know, they'll be like, oh, this is Phi Beta Sigma, Kappa Kappa chapter from Northeast Louisiana, or Xi chapter at Grambling State. You guys broke down by chapters, by organizations. The Alphas challenging the Sigmas, those bragging rights, that peanut address, ain't nothing like it.
And honestly, too, I can't speak of the 70s, but from the 80s and 90s, stepping was a major thing. Like, fraternities and sororities were featured on national television shows. Like, there was, yeah, you know, the National Step Show was put on, and from the 80s and 90s, stepping was at its prime.
Yeah.
And are these steps passed down generationally, or are there new steps that can be made? Is there anything new, like to the choreography, or is this like traditional?
All the time. It's like Pina said, depending on where you are, instant transition from stepping to now strolling has become a vital part of the process, which is a little bit different than more or less the precision stepping that like that we were doing at Greek shows and stuff has kind of been transformed into more of a like a trendy dance type formation as well, but still keeping the principles of precision, unity, everybody being in place. Far as the choreograph that goes on with doing the step show, that's constant. I mean, you get a lot of step teams, they'll use steps from a previous show, but then they'll remix it and put in. You know that somewhere along the road, you're going to have to face this other studio. So you want to be as original and as fresh as you possibly can when you get out there and get ready to put your product on the stage. Like they said, depending on the level you on with your stepping, it could be a regional thing. You got organizations that take this on state levels. You got them that take it on to you can be featured in some of these major shows. Because I remember one of the biggest shows was like Grambling State versus Southern, what they call the Bayou Classic. You had a big major step show that Friday night, you know, with organizations from all over. Louisiana, and those were like the top teams that qualified all over Louisiana. They were battling all year to get that chance to make it to step on the stage at a Bayou Classic. And again, that's my experience. But Peanut, that's one of the things we may all have in common. Now, how they do it, where and when, that may differ, but the principle is all the same.
Okay.
Of course, the Greek shows during homecoming and during classics and stuff are off the chain. However, through the schools, just internally, we have, at least at Clark Atlanta, we have dorm wars, and the dorms have teams. So stepping literally ingrained in HBCU culture. So we have like homecoming, like for our homecoming, the step show was one of the last things on Saturday. So after the game and everything, everybody heads over to the step show and stuff like that. But at the head of homecoming week, in addition to a variety of other festivities and activities and acknowledgements, et cetera, we have our dorm wars where the dorms face off each other and who's the top dorm for the, you know, for the academic year and stuff like that. And they go just as hard. They have their calls, their signs, they nicknames, all of that.
I think for me, that would definitely be a part of what would entice me to attend an HBCU. I wish that it had even been, you know, on the table when I went to college. I went to Vanguard University in Costa Mesa. And so this experience that you all are describing, I'm envious. It sounds beautiful. On that note, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment.